Blog Talk Radio.
The way China will respond is when we gather the rest of the world that in fact invades in free and in open trade, and making sure that we're in a position that the world that we deal with WHO the right way. That in fact that's when things begin to change. That's when China's behavior is going to change. The way
have you taken a cognitive?
No, test? I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say to President Trump, who brags about his test and makes your mental state an issue for voters?
Well, if he can't figure out the difference between an elephant and a lion, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Did you watch that? Look, come on, man. I know you're trying to goad me, but I mean, I'm so forward looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates. There's going to be plenty of time. And by the way, as I joke with him, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental my physical as well as my mental fitness. Interject one thing here. When you and I first met, we had a relatively small population, and we called it at the time a Hispanic population, mostly Puerto Ricans, American citizens already. But you know, in the 2020 census, which is now two censuses ago,
hey, sorry about that. Sometimes the stupidity toxins from these Biden clips will rub off on you if you get too close to them and it slow you down some. James Bostic here, and I say this without any reservations whatsoever, a steely-eyed radio man, and this is a conservative's perspective on the Patriot. Now, I almost forgot the name of the daggone show. A conservative's perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. It's live. two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a recorded version of the program as well that goes out on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, let me recommend that you try them out. You should be, because it is some of the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio that you're going to find on the radio anywhere, just like the programming we have here on Patriot Nation Radio. We've got ACP right here with me, two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have Mark Hoffman, the handsome one. Patriot Nation Radio Live, Thursdays, 8 p.m. We have Gary Binford, our man, with Patriot United Patriots Uprising, and he does that every other Monday, which means he was off this Monday. He'll be on this upcoming Monday. As a matter of fact, while we're looking at what's going on with him, let me go over here to the episodes and clue you in on what home skillet's going to be frying up on Monday. United Patriots Uprising. Communism's right at our doorstep. What can we do about it? That's the topic. Trevor Loudon, outstanding, probably the world's foremost authority here in the United States, world's foremost authority concerning communist infiltration here in the United States. Author of the book White House Reds, Enemies Within. This guy, if it deals with communism, Trevor Loudon's your man. We'll have Trevor Loudon. We'll have Raquel Occhier. Virginia Prodan will be back. Nicholas Giordano will be with him. Agnes Gibney and Quang Nguyen. This is going to be a slam bang show. And I say that every time Gary's on, and I'm always going on and on and on about it. And the reason for that is because the cat's for real, and he does great radio, and I want to share that with everybody I can think of. Gary Binford, United Patriots Uprising, this coming Monday, March 15th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You don't want to miss that, man. Do yourself a... Okay, well, and I'm going to watch it, Gary. Don't worry. You guys are in for a treat. This is going to be two shows in a row, conceivably, hopefully, where I don't cuss. Hal Moroz was on last Thursday, and he's a terrific dude, a gentleman and a good guy, and a man of deep faith. So I wanted to watch my step with him as well. And so we did okay on that one. And now Gary's been 2 hours. I'm going to try. But anyway, we see it every day. And what I played for you in those clips of Joe Biden in Joe Biden decline are all from months ago. Months ago. We're practically in the middle of March. We're opening up on the second week of March, and there is still no State of the Union address. This has been the longest period of time that a president in modern history, and by modern history, I'm saying from the end of the Second World War on, 70-some years practically, that there hasn't been a press conference at this stage in the president's first year in office. Why is that? Well, given some of the things that we've heard Joe say under optimum circumstances, the press is on his side, the cameraman's on his side, the makeup guy's on his side, the best doctors that can jack him up with every kind of cognitive boosting or enhanced cocktail that's out there. They're pumping him full of juice and there's going to reach a time when it's not going to work anymore. I don't care what they shoot him up with. And I guarantee you, we'll never know, and I'll never be able to prove it. So I guess maybe I can't guarantee it. But I would say that, you know, during the campaign and even now, anytime he's got to go out, anytime he's got to be in front of a microphone or the press in some fashion, he is loaded to the gunnels with whatever kind of cognition performance enhancers they can use on him safely. And maybe not even safely. They don't care about Joe Biden. Joe Biden got Democrats in office. Whatever happens now, hell, that doesn't mean a thing. Every member of Joe Biden's immediate family should be arrested for egregious elder abuse, especially his wife. I never thought that Joe Biden would ascend to the presidency, for the first thing. And for the second thing, once that disappointing shock registered and I had time to digest what was going on, there was no way, honestly, at that time. And I look back now and I'm going, gosh, how unbelievably optimistic I must have been. He'll get through his first term, maybe. It'll be close, but they might be able to drag him across the wire, and then something, you know, he's I got to bow out. I'm not going to be able to do this next term, and we're going to let Vice President Lyndon Johnson. Or no, what was her? And he's going to go. All right, but now, and some of the things that I've seen, I'm not sure that he's going to make it to the end of summer. Let's see with Dan Bongino. I got a clip here somewhere, I think, from Dan Bongino. And I'm going to go ahead and play it. And I'm not going to say anything about it until it's over. But this is, I think he's with Hannity. This is Dan Bongino. And what he's talking about, the subject that they're talking about that brings up the comments that Bongino is going to make, has to do, and we've talked about it here, there were a group of House Democrats, a rather large group of House Democrats, who signed a letter sent to the White House recommending that President Joe Biden fundamentally give up the nuclear codes or divulge them amongst a group that would act as a committee or a quorum in case something happened. Now, why would these folks do that? Well, obviously, they're going to do that because they don't want this crazy old man with his finger on the button, his exclusively. They want to put some kind of a fail-safe mechanism in there to ensure that, you know, he thinks he's pressing the intercom button. You know, the dude wanted an extra glass of Ovaltine at bedtime, and Pyongyang's wiped off the map. Okay. Anyway, and so here's the clip. This is Bongino. I think it's Hannity. And what they're talking about here, I guess it's kind of inside baseball, but it's what we all know.
Fascinating op-ed, but on this nuclear football story, I'm not kidding. When the producer sent this to me, I had to read this twice. I thought, like, I thought, was it Babylon Bee? Is this The Onion? This is a real story.
It was fake news,
I mean, think
right?
about how. Yeah. Right, I thought, I'm not kidding. Like, I thought, is he trying to be funny about this? I mean, this is a real story. These are Democrats. You said it in your opening segment. I hope everybody didn't miss the line. Is there something these Democrats aren't telling us? Because it's something I warned about before the election I was getting from my sources. Sean, again, it gives me absolutely no joy in saying this, and I mean that. He is in real significant trouble, Joe Biden. And listen to me. Everyone around him, everyone knows it. Everyone knows it. This is the scandal that they're not telling you how bad his condition really is.
You're a former Secret Service agent. Are you saying that if we were to bring on Secret Service agents, they would confirm what you're saying? Is that, I mean,
well, they call it the Secret Service for a reason. But I maintain a lot of contacts outside of even law enforcement. And I'm telling you, from what I've heard from people in my network, everyone knows how bad it is. Everyone. It's not a mystery. It is the worst kept secret in the White House. And how they can think about this. We're only in the second month of this. How bad is this going to be 4 years from now? This is a serious problem. This is not a joke.
That would mean a cover-up, concealing something from the American people, potentially. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to play one on TV. I'm not going to play one on radio. My own observation, Matt, is if you go back 4 years, 10 years ago, he looks weak and frail, and he's obviously struggling cognitively. I'm not making a medical diagnosis. But the reality is everybody sees it, and there's only a few of us willing to talk about it and be honest about it.
And that's really true. There is a danger, and a lot of people spoke about it. We don't have to be doctors, okay? in a case like this that is so. At this stage, you know, you got to admit it's pretty profound. Joe Biden's cognitive decline, and I'm looking here in the clip bank, and I mean, I've got Biden dementia, Biden different cages, Biden fitness, Biden fixes China, Biden forgets, Biden full of it, Biden gaffes 3, which in itself is 5 minutes long. Biden's gaffes part 2, 4.5 minutes long. Biden on China, Biden presser dodge. Biden says don't vote, Biden slips, Biden back. I've got all this stuff, and every single instance from 8 seconds to 6.5 minutes is Joe Biden basically. You don't have to be a doctor. You know, hell, many of us out there actually have the same medical degree that Bill Gates does. So, you know, we can have at it, Hoss. Look, the guy's gone, okay? And just what Bongino said today when I was listening to this clip, I said, you know, that's absolutely right. This is just month two. Month two. There hasn't been a press conference of the president on his own. Now, has he conversed with reporters? Yes. Has he conducted television interviews? Yes. Has he done this? Has Joe Biden been with him? Yes. Have handlers been close by? Yes. Has he been on his own? No. Let me see if I can find Sunday, or wait, it was Saturday, Friday or Saturday of this week. He was making some comments directed to the new Secretary of Defense, and the occasion was the promotion of two women to the rank of general officer.
I just want to thank you both, and I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but my the guy who runs that outfit over there.
The Pentagon.
I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done to try to implement what we just talked about, and for recommending these two women for promotion. Thank you all. May God bless you all, and may God protect our troops.
Okay, now what you're hearing here in the background are papers being shuffled. Joe was walking away from the podium, but he doesn't seem to know where to go. And it's like he's looking around for one of these people to follow.
You've been listening to President Biden marking international.
Pretty safe to say, if not the most stressful job on the globe, it being president of the United States, being the leader of the free world, has got to be in the top three. Look at George Bush W. Look at George W. Bush when he went into office and when he came out on his second term. Look at Bill Clinton when he went into office and came out of his second term. Look at Barack Obama. He's a young man. And what he looks like at the end of his second term. This is a tough, stressful job. The only guy I saw that never really looked like it bothered him and actually looked like he fed off of it was Donald Trump. I think if anything, it rejuvenated him. But it is a job that will grind a man down. And I'm talking about a fellow that's at the top of his game, physically, intellectually, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally. Come on, Joe Biden isn't any of those things. He isn't any, he's not anywhere close to any of those things. Section 1, 25th Amendment, the United States Constitution. In case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Section 2. Whenever there is a vacancy in the office of vice president, the president shall nominate a vice president who shall take office upon confirmation by a majority vote of both houses of Congress. Section 3. Whenever the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that he is unable, and Section 3 may be what we look at in the case of Joe Biden. Whenever the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits to them a written declaration to the contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the vice president as acting president. Now, in this section, the president is removing himself from office by writing a letter to the president pro tempore of the Senate, Speaker of the House of Representatives. Boys, it's becoming more and more apparent to me these days that I have lost a step and I might be losing another one. And I do not think that I am as sharp as I need to be to execute the powers of this office. I'm stepping down. I'm getting out. However, so in this case, the powers of the presidency and the duties therein fall to the vice president of the United States. But then, if Joe Biden says, after about 6 or 8 weeks, hey, fellas, feeling a lot better, feeling a lot sharper, got a little bit of rest, feel good, I think I'm ready to go back in there, and I just want to let you boys know. And all things being equal, then the vice president would resume vice presidential duties and the president would resume presidential duties. And then in section 4, the vice president and what they call a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments, so this would be cabinet positions, or of other such body as Congress may provide and transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge his office. So this would be the vice president and members of the Senate saying, hey, guys, you've seen Joe. We've all seen him. Come on. And incidentally, none of these people are doctors, by the way. So we don't have to be doctors to make a judgment here. We just have to be fair and you know, even-minded on this, even-handed. Most likely, and this is my prediction, when the end, if we can call it that, comes for Joe Biden, and he reaches a point intellectually where it, like, it's not obvious now, for crying out loud. Either he will write a letter or a letter will be written on his behalf indicating, hey, you guys got a highlight film that's 3 hours long of me. I know. And he got what he wanted. He got to be president. He got the Oval Office. He got Air Force One. Jill got to be first lady. Not doctor. Doctor, not doctor. And so they'll live in those trappings, and he'll lay out a bunch of executive orders that will be remarkable, basically from an historic sense. But in terms of real true benefit to the nation, no, no, not so much. Not so much. Now, here's another thing that I think, if it doesn't keep you up at night, by God, it ought to. Our enemies within the country and without, our enemies are even more aware of these things than you and I are talking about. And they're also aware of what this type of cognitive decline means to them in terms of opportunities. They're poised right now, and in their mindset, they're ready to get away with a lot of stuff, and they probably will. I'm honestly, I mean, this is like Bongino said, this is month two. And as this administration moves forward every day, the challenges are going to become greater because they don't know what to do. How do we deal with the crisis of the border? Well, we just don't allow anyone to talk about it. Middle Eastern terrorism and the people who engage in Middle Eastern terrorism have become more and more active as the Biden administration moves on. At some point, and I predict that it's more than likely, I think it's going to be on a foreign policy front. There's going to be something happen, a terrorist act, something that is going to show beyond any shadow of a doubt, if you still have some, just how feckless and ineffective these people are. Joe Biden's front line are the second and third string cats from the Clinton and Obama administration. They're in top tier positions. Believe me, people, they are not top-tier people. Jen Psaki? Where the hell is it? No. Okay. All right. Seriously? Sarah Huckabee. Kayleigh McEnany. Jen Psaki. Okay, these are not the most competent of people. These are not the most effective of managers that you want to have handling a serious crisis. down at the bottom of the hour. I think we'll take a break. We'll come back with a little bit of this more. And then we're going to move on to Cuomo. Things are just stacking up on him as well. What do we want to play? We will be back with more of ACP. I would say after this, but I'm going to say as soon as I scroll through here desperately, looking for something to play. See you in a minute.
But, hey, there's scandals on the other side, too. Andrew Cuomo in New York, you read about that? Now he's got a sexual harassment scandal. Some woman in the office says he shouldn't have been flirting. I don't know, you know, that's what she's kissing. That shouldn't have happened. The jokes that were not good. I know it sounds cheap. It was actually very romantic. He said to her, I want to grow old with you and then put you in a home and cover up your death. But American politics, it's so screwed.
Your governor of New York's done one hell of a job. I think he's sort of a gold standard.
Look, we have to be able to say we did everything we can, right? We have to look at that death number every day. 166 people died. The only way you put your head on the pillow at night is you say, I did everything I could. They had a hospital bed. They had the best nurses. They had the best doctors. They had ventilators. They had the best treatment. We did everything we could do. Up until today, as I am before you, I can look you in the eyes and say, we did everything that we could. As a society, you can't save everyone. You're going to lose people. That's life. That's somebody else is in charge of that.
You sure inhaled his nipples.
But we did everything we could.
Whoops.
I want to make sure the same is true until this is over. We did everything we could. Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. That is a fact. It's a fact that he admitted, and the CDC admitted, and Fauci admitted. The China virus. It was not the China virus.
Oh, yes, it was.
It was the European virus that came to New York.
You are
They
a liar.
Missed it.
No, they didn't.
They missed it. The China
you
virus went to Europe. It got on a plane. It went to Europe.
Oh.
They never even thought of the possibility. And then 3 million Europeans got on the plane and came to New York. And they brought
Europeans
the virus.
On one plane?
January, they brought the virus.
Yeah.
February, they brought the virus.
Brought the virus.
March, they brought the virus. And in mid-March, the federal government does a travel ban from Europe. Mid-March. Too little, too late, Mr. President. He caused the COVID outbreak in New York.
A third of all deaths in this nation are from nursing homes. New York State, we're only about 28% only, but we're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes. But who cares? 33, 28 died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died. Fact, of the 613 nursing homes, we have 613 nursing homes in the state. 365 received a person from a hospital. Of the 365 that received a person from this March 25th guidance, which was then superseded in May, 98% of those 365 already had COVID in their hot facility. COVID did not get into the nursing homes by people coming from hospitals. COVID got into the nursing homes by staff walking into the nursing home when
With
we didn't even know we had COVID.
America.
Staff walking into a nursing home, even though they were asymptomatic, because the national experts all told us you could only spread COVID if you had symptoms. And they were wrong. COVID may have been brought into a nursing home because visitors brought it in and didn't know they were contagious because the guidance was you can only be contagious if you have symptoms, if you're sneezing, if you're coughing. That turned out to be wrong. That's how COVID got into the nursing homes. 98% of the people who took a person back from a hospital who was probably no longer contagious, already had it in the facility. And they signed and agreed that they could handle it because they already had people who were COVID in the nursing home. If you look at the rate of death before the March 25th order and after the order was rescinded, the rate of death is the same.
Your governor of New York's done one hell of a job. I think he's sort of a gold standard.
Who cares? They died.
Oh. Yes. Yes, Benito. They died. They died indeed. And you know they died, don't you? Because you killed them.
That was a little 5-minute little montage there I put together over the weekend of the honorable lion murdering governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, a.k.a. Benito Nipolini. Almost a year ago, we're a couple of weeks shy of it being a year ago, March 25th, 2020, an edict came from the New York State Board of Health, a directive, excuse me, to nursing homes and hospitals and the discharge and admission and readmission planners in those two communities. The belief was, or at least the story is now, and it was the story then, so I suppose there may be something to it. The belief was that the expectation was a massive influx of COVID patients that was going to strain the hospital infrastructure system. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to move people out as quickly as they could to make room for potentially more serious cases, more severe cases. So these people, and they have COVID, and maybe their symptoms are diminished, or maybe they no longer have a fever, but they're still contagious. They're sent, they're moved out of the hospitals, and they're moved into nursing homes. Well, upon admission to the nursing home, they can't be assessed for COVID based on this new directive that came from the New York Board of Health March 25th, 2020. So they can't refuse these people admission. They can't assess them for COVID, even if they suspect it. They can't refuse them admission, even if they have COVID. You got to deal with it. The result of this being that it was more important to stick a thumb in the eye of Donald Trump and refuse to use the Javits Center hospital that was constructed in record-breaking time. U.S. Navy hospital ship USS Comfort in New York Harbor for 3 weeks treated maybe 100 people. That was more important. And because of this directive, nursing home deaths due to COVID skyrocketed. And even in spite of that, policy was left in place for over 2 months before it was rescinded. By the time it was rescinded, close to 5,000 people had already died. And it was at this point that the Cuomo administration goes, holy Jesus. And they start drastically revising downward the death toll numbers in nursing homes, as much as 56%. Now, this is according to Attorney General Letitia James, who did an investigation into this, and this is what she found out. Excuse me just a moment. And we're back. Where was I? Oh, so it's coming to light. And Daniel Greenfield, who is a Shulman Fellow at that institute, he's also a frequent contributor at Front Page Magazine, has been on this thing from the very beginning. And everything, just about everything that I have shared with you has come from Dan Greenfield. There were a lot of others on it that jumped on over the summer of last year as this thing became bigger and bigger. But we were talking about it here very early on. So towards the end of the summer, as this story, this Cuomo story with the nursing home deaths, is becoming more and more obvious and more difficult to explain away, lawmakers in the New York State Capitol at Albany, they want some information on these numbers too, when this is coincidental to the first Department of Justice investigation. And the Cuomo administration sandbagged both Albany and the DOJ. They wouldn't give him the information. They just said no. And then they admitted it about a month ago on a Zoom call. Cuomo's executive secretary said, hey, yeah, we wanted to do this, but we froze. We were afraid that the Trump administration and their campaign was going to make a political football out of this, and we didn't want this information getting out. And plus, the DOJ was looking at us, and we were afraid we were going to be arrested and tossed in jail. So we didn't want to give them the information either. They didn't say that, but that's what they meant. So now we see nursing home death toll numbers over 15,000 just in the state of New York. That's not counting everybody else in the state of New York who died from COVID. That's just the nursing home numbers. That's horrifying. Now, he's not alone in doing this. Phil Murphy, Gretchen Whitmer, Mike DeWine, Tom Wolfe, Gavin Newsom. The list goes on. Democrats, all. But in the last 2 weeks, what have we heard about concerning Andrew Cuomo? Yeah. That he's acted like a creep, which shouldn't really surprise anyone. I mean, look at the guy. And look at his attitude. Look at his demeanor. He's a thug. He's a bully. He's an elite, boiled kid from just like his brother Chris Fredo. Whoops, said the F word. Privilege and entitlement their entire lives, doing whatever they wanted to do, no consequences, or very little. I have no doubt. Today, I think another woman, six women have come out, and the call for his resignation is becoming louder. I think they're even looking in to articles of impeachment. I'm not real sure. There's one. New York State either has an impeachment procedure or they have a recall procedure. I'm not sure which. But again, even though he was pretty good at it and he killed a lot of people, he wasn't original. Best way to say that. Now, he's killed 15,000 folks, and the focus has gone from killing and lied about it, covering it up, has gone from killing these 15,000 New Yorkers to the much more serious contention that he has sexually harassed women. One of them in particular, Lindsay Boylan. Lindsay Boylan's a Bernie Sanders supporter. Does that have anything to do with it? I don't know. But somebody's got to go. Is what the deal is, all right? Somebody has got to go, and it's going to be Andrew. Nipples has got to go, and they're going to get rid of him, and they're not going to get rid of him because he killed 15,000 people. He's going to get a pass on that. They're not going to worry about that. He's got to go because he's a creep, not because he's a murderer, a mass murderer. He's got to go because he is a creep. One, to paraphrase Stalin, one dead grandmother or grandfather is a tragedy. It is a heartbreak. But thousands of dead grandmas and grandpas, it's just another statistic. And it's a statistic that has the potential to not only take down Cuomo, but Governor Whitmer in Michigan, Murphy in New Jersey, Newsom in California, Wolf in Pennsylvania, maybe Northam in Virginia, maybe DeWine in Ohio. So that's why, after briefly allowing the public to vent their spleens a little bit at the decision to turn nursing homes in these states into death camps, the Democrats and the media pivoted to the lips of Lindsay Boylan and this unsolicited kiss. And this is what sets Cuomo apart, because while Cuomo and Whitmer and Murphy and Newsom and Wolf all ordered nursing homes to take infected patients, only Cuomo, presumably, had made unwanted advances on Lindsay Boylan. And much more importantly, the Bernie Sanders AOC crowd is only targeting Cuomo, not the others. And as I said before, there's no reason not to believe. As a matter of fact, there's every reason to believe that Cuomo is a bully and a creep. But if we look at this, and I'm not defending the guy, I'm just pointing this out. This sudden parade of Cuomo victims is being led by the same radical wing that wants to primary him. Lindsay Boylan tried to primary Representative Jerry the Jowls Nadler by claiming he didn't want to impeach Trump hard enough and was running to be the borough president of Manhattan. It's a little hypocritical, really, for the wife of an investment banker to be going after the 1%, but with the Democrats, hypocrisy is the name of the game. Now, Assemblyman Ron Kim, who claims that Cuomo bullied him so hard that it made his wife cry, also a major supporter of Bernie Sanders and of radicals like the anti-Semitic Mumita Ahmed. Kim at least has some credibility because he had raised the issue of Cuomo's infected admission order, but like most lefties, he focused more on the enabling lawsuits against nursing homes. Now, let's get to that for a minute. The Greater New York Hospital Association is a huge donor, not only to Cuomo and Cuomo campaign, but also to the Democratic, the state Democrat committee, the Democrat state committee, which is run by Andrew Cuomo, to the tune of over $2 million total. They get that, you know, they get that money to Cuomo, and shortly after he signs this directive, he also issues another executive order eliminating nursing homes and hospitals from liability for any wrongful death suits that may arise from just this situation. Yeah. Yeah. In addition to being a creep, just like Gretchen Whitmer, just like Gavin Newsom, just like Phil Murphy, just like, who's the other guy I was talking about there? Shoot. There's so many of them. We could pick them. Gavin Newsom, Tom Wolf, Phil Murphy, Cuomo. Every single one of these guys did, aside from hitting on Lindsay Boylan, setting that aside, Cuomo and all these guys all did the same thing. Every single one of them did the same thing. But people aren't calling on Andrew Cuomo to resign because he killed 15,000 senior citizens. They're calling on him to resign because of sexual harassment and being a creep. The hypocrisy here is almost too delicious. In our conversation, or my conversation last week with Judge Hal Morose, who was here on Thursday night, it was one of the things we talked about here was the two elements of society, the two extreme demographics of society that Democrats claim to be the champions of, children and the elderly, are the ones who suffer the most at the hands of these people. Unlimited abortion up to and past the time of birth. It's no exaggeration when they say in this article that the nursing home system in New York became death camps. And it wouldn't be an exaggeration to say it in Michigan or New Jersey or Pennsylvania or California. And in a subset of the depravity that I think this is, she was penciled, she. He started out life as Rick Levin. Somewhere along the line, he didn't dig that, and he became Rachel Levin. And he's still a dude, but he dresses like a woman and says he is. And we're all supposed to say, okay, well, yeah, you are. And that's insanity, because body dysmorphia is a serious issue, and rather than a deputy cabinet post, this pathetic soul needs treatment. Well, Rachel Levin was Pennsylvania's Secretary of Health and Human Services, and Rachel Levine, just like Dr. Zucker, who was the chairman of the New York State Board of Health, and like every other director of the respective state boards of health who enacted these policies, she's the one responsible for killing nursing home residents to such a large degree in the state of Pennsylvania. Again, the transgender community may be nice people. They may be benign. They may be harmless. They may be somewhat malignant, like what we see here, based on the political ideology of this insane specimen. But it is a psychological condition, a very serious psychological condition that merits treatment. Serious, serious treatment. Joe Biden nominated Rachel Levine. Call him Dick for short, but I'm not even going to go there. Rachel Levine for Deputy Secretary or Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services over the entire country. And at the height of implementing this policy that was killing senior citizens in Pennsylvania, as it likewise killed them in the tens of thousands in Ohio and New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania and California. She removed her own mother from the nursing home environment and placed her in a hotel during this time period. This is Rand Paul talking with Rachel Levine concerning her nomination and some of the reservations that he has with her assuming the post of Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services. Here we go.
Genital mutilation has been nearly universally condemned. Genital mutilation has been condemned by the WHO, the United Nations Children's Fund, the United Nations Population Fund. According to the WHO, genital mutilation is recognized internationally as a violation of human rights. Genital mutilation is considered particularly egregious because, as the WHO notes, It is nearly always carried out on minors and is a violation of the rights of children. Most genital mutilation is not typically performed by force, but as WHO notes, that by social convention, social norm, the social pressure to conform, to do what others do and have been doing, as well as the need to be accepted socially and the fear of being rejected by the community. American culture is now normalizing the idea that minors can be given hormones to prevent their biological development of their secondary sexual characteristics. Dr. Levine, you have supported both allowing minors to be given hormone blockers to prevent them from going through puberty, as well as surgical destruction of a minor's genitalia. Like surgical mutilation, hormonal interruption of puberty can permanently alter and prevent secondary sexual characteristics. The American College of Pediatricians reports that 80 to 95% of prepubertal children with gender dysphoria will experience resolution by late adolescence if not exposed to medical intervention and social affirmation. Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I will look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. Do you support the government intervening to override the parents' consent to give a child puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and/or amputation surgery of breasts and genitalia? You have said that you're willing to accelerate the protocols for street kids. I'm alarmed that poor kids with no parents who are homeless and distraught, you would just go through this and allow that to happen to a minor. I would hope that you would have compassion for Kira Bell, who's a 23-year-old girl who was confused with her identity. At 14, she read on the internet about something about transsexuals. She thought, well, maybe that's what I am. She ended up getting these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. She had her breast amputated. But here's what ultimately she says now. And this is a very insightful decision from someone who made a mistake but was led to believe this was a good thing by the medical community. I made a brash decision as a teenager, as a lot of teenagers do, trying to find confidence and happiness. Except now the rest of my life will be negatively affected, she said, adding that the medicalized gender transitioning was a very temporary, superficial fix for a very complex identity issue. What I'm alarmed at is that you're not willing to say absolutely minors shouldn't be making decisions to amputate their breast or to amputate their genitalia. For most of our history, we have believed that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care and the complexity of this field.
Let it go into the record that the witness refused to answer the question. The question is a very specific one. Should minors be making these momentous decisions? For most of the history of medicine, we wouldn't let you have a cut sewn up in the ER, but you're willing to let a minor take things that prevent their puberty, and you think they get that back? You give a woman testosterone enough that she grows a beard, you think she's going to go back looking like a woman when you stop the testosterone? You have permanently changed them. Fertility is another problem. None of these drugs have been approved for this. They're all being used off-label. I find it ironic that the left that went nuts over hydroxychloroquine being used possibly for COVID are not alarmed that these hormones are being used off-label. There's no long-term studies. We don't know what happens to them. We do know that there are dozens and dozens of people who've been through this who regret that this happened and a permanent change happened to them. And, you know, if you've ever been around children, 14-year-olds can't make this decision. In the gender dysphoria clinic in England, 10% of the kids are between the ages of 3 and 10. We should be outraged that someone's talking to a 3-year-old about changing their sex. I can't thank, vote thank, for you if you can't.
Thank you so much, Senator Paul. Senator Levine, thank you for answering the question. I will turn to Senator Baldwin.
That was Rachel Levine, a nominee for the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services cabinet post with the Biden administration. Rachel Levine was the former Director of Health and Human Services for the state of Pennsylvania. It's going to average out in these four states that people are focused on. It's going to average out to about 40,000 nursing home deaths in these four states. Grandmas and grandpas, 40,000 aunts and uncles, 40,000 brothers and sisters. Excuse me. This is not a scandal. This is a crime. And it's not just any crime, but the single worst crime committed by any American elected official. When 9 people died in Flint, Michigan, not only did we spend years hearing about the water crisis, but former Governor Rick Snyder and the former head of the Health and Human Services in that state were recently indicted on charges of involuntary manslaughter. Is there any conceivable reason why Cuomo and Whitmer and Newsom and Murphy and Wolf shouldn't be facing involuntary manslaughter charges as well? How is it that thousands of entirely foreseeable deaths could not result in manslaughter charges? In their eagerness to get rid of Cuomo, Democrats have opened up a political Pandora's box. It's time for the conservative movement to start listening to the local Republicans in California and in Michigan and in New Jersey and Pennsylvania who have pursued investigations of their respective governors and have stopped repeating the lefty media narratives that won't ever put Andrew Cuomo behind bars. Cuomo and Whitmer and Murphy and Newsom and Wolf should have been charged by the Justice Department last year. Joe Biden and Merrick Garland are never going to let that happen. But the bottom line is this: tens of thousands of grandfathers and grandmothers are dead. Democrats killed them. The Biden administration is covering it up and protecting the perpetrators from facing justice, including its own assistant health secretary.
There's been a lot of talk about protecting our right. The right to keep and bear the arms that we'll need for the fight. And while we've clung to that amendment with all of our might, other rights have been withdrawn. The right to representative democracy is done. It is money that's selecting all the candidates who run. It is money buying policies that impact everyone. And we fell for the con. Tyranny just overthrew you. Your guns, no use, cause they outdrew you. But you don't realize it, do you? The truth is now long gone. Our leaders passing laws that only benefit the rich. They take our last resources with a clever bait and switch. HMOs and banks and corporate CEOs that they enrich. And that's what's going on. Most those voters favor tighter regulations on the banks and taxes for the billionaires, but they just say no thanks. Cause that, of course, is socialism. You fill in the banks, but it's you they prey upon. Don't let party platform fool ya. Excuse us for a moment while we school ya. You can't let partisanship rule ya. What a madness will go on and on and on and on. Da 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 da. Is gone. Devices are the spies for government surveillance. Those are now the ears and eyes. They use the corporate data. No subpoenas, no surprise. And still we don't catch on. You can now be fired for expressing what you think, whether you're at work or doing dishes in your sink. Your union cannot help you. They fell prey to double think. They lost the marathon. You decide who's gonna rule ya. Look beyond the red and blue to find a way you can cut through corruption that lives on. You have no right to education if among the poor, and if you try, a life of debt is what you have in store. Education is related to the years you are good for, and those years are soon gone. Corporations freely do their business as monopolies. They're poisoning the planet and they do just as they please, destroying the free market while they spread like a disease as they keep marching on. No longer can we just stick to the party politics, due to the fact that they are out to screw. Provided all the news in 84. Now there's only 6, it's 44, less than it was before. A media consensus now exists for every war, and the wars go on and on. We can recover from this if we wake up and get smart. It's a long, slow process, but a step is where we start. Let's ignore the menu and start choosing a la carte till the party power is gone. We're the ones who hold the power. This must be our finest hour. We're the ones we must empower, so the truth goes marching on.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad.
You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
So where are we at? Are we there? Are you ready to get out of your chair? You ready to go over to the window? You ready to stick your head out? You ready to tell them you're mad as hell and you don't want to take us anymore? I don't know, are you? I mean, I thought for a long time people were. When I saw the movie 40 years ago and I thought it was an awesome picture. But then I thought about it and I found that clip. And I found it at a time when, you know, it was about 2 years ago, I guess. You know, the Trump people and Trump supporters and the president had been under fire since he came down the escalator and said, hey, you know what? I'm running for president. I'm going to do it. Yep. Thought about it. I'm going to do it. And he did it. And they hated him and us ever since. And there's still something about that soliloquy there. From Network, the name of the movie. It resonates with me. It's timeless. Everything you talked about there is happening today. Russians, inflation, crime in the streets. And I guess that will ultimately be the question is, you know, what are we mad as hell? Are we mad enough? Are we mad as hell? We're not going to take anymore? Really? Now, I'm not meaning to be cynical here. But or pessimistic, yeah, that's probably a better word. I got to be honest with you. Some days I have a hard time seeing it. I have a hard time seeing it myself. I have a hard time seeing it in others. And I keep saying to myself with each event that happens, Floyd, all the devastation this summer because of them, because of Black Lives Matter, because of Antifa, because of all the attacks that have gone on over the last couple of years, because of all those attacks, sorry, I was leaning back, because of all those attacks that have gone on over the last couple of years, I thought it's going to happen. Things are going to happen. These people who are being victimized, these people who are having violent act after violent act after violent act visited upon them, having their neighborhoods burned, they're going to push back. And when they push back, it's going to knock these people on their ass, and it's going to be a mess. But it hadn't happened. I'm glad. I'm not advocating violence. Please don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, sooner or later, you know, even the most patient and forbearing person in the world is going to say enough is enough, this far no further. And, you know, noses wind up getting punched over things like this. Cans of whoop butt get opened up. I don't want to see that. And like I said, I'm not advocating that, but you got to be blind not to understand or see what's going on to think that that's not going to happen at some point. I mean, people have already gotten hurt. People have gotten killed. And I don't know, maybe in a way it's kind of astonishing that the bloodshed has been as limited as it has, and thank God for it. But at some point, people, at some point, it's going to be enough. Not dead air, just thinking about all this mess. I think what we're going to do, I'm about out of gas anyway, and we were only going 90 minutes this evening. I think I'm going to go ahead and just close things down. I want to thank you guys. sometimes I worry that with so many momentous things happening, and there are no shortage of momentous things happening, that we become inured, we become numb to the moment. And, you know, certain things can be lost on us that really ought not be. But I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to hang out and talk about some of this stuff. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Ordinarily, I do a two-hour show on Thursdays, but we didn't. And it goes that way sometimes. We do a one-hour program on Thursdays because we're back-to-back. I'm 7 to 8, and El Guapo, the handsome one, Mark Hoffman with Patriot Nation Radio Live, is on from 8 to 9. Don't forget, next Monday, coming up March 15th, put it on your calendar. United Patriots Uprising with my man Gary Binford. Outstanding radio people, and you do not want to miss it. And next week's topic, communism, and just how deeply embedded it is in America's political system. And it's going to be that topic is going to be covered by some of the foremost experts in that field. So I want to thank everybody once again. We will be we'll be back here on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless each and every one of you. God bless America. Take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you here on Thursday.